Now to the inside segment. We've seen a 66% increase of hospital admissions for children positive with COVID across the country just last week, although deaths remain low. With the holidays ending and surge expected in the coming weeks, what is the best way to keep children safe? My guest tonight is Dr. Marilyn Corder, pediatrician and adjunct professor at Howard University School of Medicine. We're not taking phone calls tonight because we have a truncated show and are ending at 7:30. Dr. Corder, thank you so much for talking to us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I want to start with your reaction to the news from the FDA today approving boosters for children 12 to 15 years old. Of course, we're still waiting for final approval from the CDC, and that could come as soon as Wednesday. But your thoughts about the news coming out of the FDA today, please.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I understand why the urgency. I do still have some concern with that booster. And now they're even talking about it being, instead of waiting 6 months, to go ahead and do it within the 5 months from having the second vaccine. Now, we are now seeing so much, 60%, and then that's even more numbers that we're hearing, of the hospitalization of children. And this is even going to be more because, remember, they've been out for 2 weeks. And we will see, as the dust settles, second week, the third week in January, how infectious this Omicron really is.
You, as it relates to the booster for 12 to 15 year olds, what concerns do you have?
Well, you know, here's where my concern is. The second vaccine that the 12 to 15 year olds have received, And with that protection, allowing all of the 6 months and then some, as we are now hearing that we could do it on within 5 months, then how long would that booster last? And do we really need right now to have the angst of, okay, now we're going to get this booster when we're still trying to get the minimal of 50%, 70% of that age group being adequately with double vaccinations. So I understand, and like I said, we'll know by Wednesday with what the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying on that. But again, we are in a pandemic. So as a physician, a scientist, I understand why we have to and why it's something that is suggested. But it's going to be interesting how many parents will take on that. I'm seeing so many folks now asking me to write for their child to be remote learning while we are waiting for this 2 to 3 weeks in January, again, to see the infectiousness of the Omicron and the returning back to school.
Yeah, and to that point, I was going to say, to that point, we've moved through the holiday season. We had gatherings for family, of course, including children, Thanksgiving, the Christmas holiday. And so is this surge that we are seeing now with children and the expected increase over the next 7 to 14 days, do you believe that is directly related to that?
Absolutely. And if you follow the date of Thanksgiving, and remember, Thanksgiving may have been 3 days with a weekend. Now we're talking 2 weeks, Harold, with two weekends, that people traveled, that folks were visiting, that they may not have been so tight with the mandate in terms of, you know, unmasking. Of course, they were eating. Everyone wants to be around the new baby, the grandchildren. So we're talking three generations in many cases. And I just, as I'm hearing story after story, their guards were down, not to mention entertainment venues. So, again, I am concerned with what's going to happen as we go back, and I think that it's going to be a lot worse going back this time after the two-week holiday break. I hope I'm wrong, and I do remember, as we talked about the timeline, it's now 22 months that we've been in this pandemic, and initially the first 3 or 4 months or up to 6 months we said children would not be affected. Well, now the population we're talking about with the highest rate of new infection are children. And we're seeing an increase in the infectivity, and we're talking about folks who are less than 5 years of age who are actually not able to get vaccinated, and they're at risk. So we're talking the vulnerable, the younger child, of course, bringing it home. Many times they're asymptomatic, and that concerns me because you never know. And then before you realize, as they're getting tested routinely, depending upon what the school protocol is, and then we find out they're positive, and then the tracing and the contact, you know, where and how they got it is always going to be the unknown. So it's like a domino effect, Carol.
So it's been my understanding, part of the discussion that experts are sharing today is that the younger children are, those who are infected, are having upper respiratory issues. Can you talk about that?
Yes, yes. So, you know, this is winter time anyway, and we talk about winter upper respiratory bronchiolitis, RSV. So we also know that folks are indoors more and will have more of the congestion, the dry heat. So we're seeing an increase in the runny nose and the upper respiratory system that's being affected by the Omicron with fever. Now, as we know, the Omicron is not as virulent as it would be with the Delta in terms of hospitalization. However, children are hospitalized more now because with the fever, with the respiratory symptoms and the dehydration, we're concerned. So we do see up to 66% increase in hospitalization of younger population in our children. And those that cannot be vaccinated is our main concern. So we're talking 5 years old and below.
If you are a parent with a child who is infected with COVID and is showing symptoms, whether it's runny nose, congestion, difficulty breathing, what should you give them? How should you treat this if these are mild to moderate symptoms?
And every day and every hour, I'm getting those calls. And, you know, let's add that cough, the runny nose and the cough. Well, as we talk to them, of course, we have to individualize because, you know, many of them just in 3 or 4 days, they're fine. They're back to themselves, the energy level. You know, they're not laying around moping and sick and lethargic. But then you have those other children who have comorbidities such as asthma, such as other respiratory illnesses, as well as immunocompromised for whatever that is. And unfortunately,
And fever, of course.
Yes, yes. And that fever can be relentless, 3 to 4 days and 5 days. And we're saying alternate with Tylenol, Motrin. And we're on the phone each and every hour with families. And there are times we may have to recommend going to the hospital, recommend going to an urgent care, because now what the emergency rooms are saying is don't come unless you have symptoms. Don't come because you want to make sure you want to get tested, because that's a whole nother conversation of getting tested, you know, just to make sure if it is and what to do. That's why we have the home test now. But going to the hospital, when you go, you don't want to go unless you have the symptoms of something that's not yielding to the over-the-counter medication, you know, the nebulization if need be, the fluids and the rest. And those are the cases we're concerned about because we do still see hospitalization. Some children are still going on vent and needing that respiratory support throughout this COVID.
So you mentioned alternating between Tylenol and Motrin for fever, but I do want to talk a little bit more about treating some of the other symptoms, assuming, of course, that these symptoms resemble a bad cold. So you there may be wheezing, phlegm, coughing, and the like. Do you treat it as you would a bad cold, even if you know that it is a COVID infection? And I'm talking about children.
Good question. Good question. And I'm also going to add, or it could be the flu.
Exactly. It these symptoms may sound like the flu, may be like the flu.
Right.
So
And
how so what do you
COVID.
suggest? What kind of medications?
Well, and COVID symptoms are the great masquerader. Either there are no symptoms, they may be mild symptoms of a clear runny nose, or there could be a list of all the symptoms, such as the runny nose. But you also can get what we call gastritis, Harold. Lots of these children have what sounds like a viral gastritis, tummy ache, vomiting, diarrhea. So we have to list that. We cannot forget about those symptoms. But going back to the immediate question of the cold, yes, you may have to do cold preparations over the counter or even prescription. Sometimes we've had to write prescriptions for antibiotics depending upon how affected that respiratory condition is, because we know that pneumonia can follow with the inflammation in the lungs. And so with that, we want to, with the inflammation of lungs, then we want to make sure that we're not sitting on a pre-pneumonia situation. So sometimes it's preventive. Often it's the vitamin C, the chest rub, the humidifier, the fluids, of course, the non-dairy that makes you mucousy. So we still use those, I call them old remedies, in addition to the over-the-counter cough syrups, the nasal sprays, and then, of course, sometimes prescriptions. And if you have a condition such as, say, let's say asthma or tonsillitis or different things that also will affect that cold even worse, or that COVID can affect it, your body even more so, then you want to definitely be on top of those and each and every day and updating with your pediatrician how your child is doing, because they should be improving after a day or two versus worsening.
How do you know when you need to take your child to a hospital? I mean,
That's
how
right.
bad does it have to get before you say it's enough of treating my child at home, it's time to go to a hospital?
Excellent question, Harold, and you're right. And one of the things that we will say to the parents, do A, B, and C. However, this is what you would expect. The energy level should improve. Sometimes after they awaken that morning, they have a spurt of energy. You should see that. Throughout the day, they may still need to nap. But the energy level, the hydration, the wanting to eat, those are improvements. The temperature, the fever begins to break. But when you don't see a relief in the temperature, when you see a child that's less energized, becoming more and more lethargic, becoming more and more respiratory rate increasing and can't even be comfortable to eat and coughing and vomiting, et cetera. That's when you say, okay, those are your red flags. You have to now go and get support, be it respiratory support, be it IV, because often they're dehydrated because they just don't want to drink.
This is really the big question. We are seeing in various and sundry jurisdictions temporarily going back to virtual learning. New York's new mayor has said he's keeping the schools open. Some school systems are seeing this as a day-to-day process. With the surge coming and more children getting infected, what is your feeling? Should children be in school because of they may be less symptomatic? Your thoughts on that very quickly.
Absolutely. And I'm going to be very quick with that. Each jurisdiction is, I think, should be, okay, each jurisdiction should be doing their own thing. When I say doing their own thing, in terms of there are some jurisdictions saying, look, we have too much of the surge. We're backing up. We're going to wait a week or two before school starts. And you need to know the protocol, mask wearing, hand washing, social distancing, testing. Parents, you need to understand how that school tests. And how do they notify your child, notify you in reference where your child has been exposed? So all of that we take into account. And if you feel uncomfortable with the way they rolled out the, you know, these mandates, et cetera, then it's time to then say, you know, I need to keep my child home. How do I feel about it? I'm concerned as a pediatrician, getting calls all day long, hearing the cases that are asymptomatic to up to the ones that I have to hospitalize. So, Harold, we're going to see. We're not done with this. In the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we will see, as again, as the dust settles, how this crisis rolls out. So, again, I want to let everyone know this Omicron has fueled this surge, and the children are the ones that are affected. So, again, you know, parents, stay woke and stay aware and stay in contact with your pediatrician. One of the things that we should also talk about, Harold, is the testing, if that's okay. I mean, if you...
Yeah, please do. Yeah, go right ahead, doctor. Go. You can just go right ahead.
Okay. All right. All right. So one thing that we now are doing more so than not, say 6-7 months ago, we're testing. So you hear about the home test, the rapid test, the PCR test, all of that. And I will say first, I'm happy to know that my parents, many of them have their home testing. They'll say, I tested yesterday, should I test again, et cetera. The more we know, the better. But I also want to make sure that we are aware that sometimes you could get what we call false negative on the test. So the PCR is still, in my opinion, the gold standard test. So that could follow up. You have your home test. Now, if your home test is positive, then you're positive, okay? That's when it's positive, that means you're really positive. However, don't just rely on the home test being the all in all, because that second test, be it a home test and or a PCR, will tell you. So that's one thing. And we've had families who 2 or 3 folks are negative from the home test, and one person positive, and then I had suggested, make sure you do the PCR, and they call me back 2 days later and say, you know what, the rest of us are also positive. And you want to quarantine. When you're quarantining, I know we're having discussions on less days of quarantine for folks like myself who are on the front line, but you want to make sure that that quarantine is respected, 5 to 7 to 10 days. And if you're symptomatic, you want to make sure you're quarantined till all the symptoms are gone. So that's key. And we want to make sure that we're clear on that. CDC rolls it out and really makes it very clear on being asymptomatic versus having symptoms. So please, please, Village, we want to make sure that we keep everyone safe and healthy, not just yourselves, but your neighbors and your classmates, because it can be a domino effect. And that child who's actually in your child's class, if they're not, their family is not adhering to the CDC recommendations, can affect a lot. And it's like a ripple out. So we want to make sure we all are clear. Hand washing, mask wearing, social distancing, reporting, and doing what we know we need to do. Even if it's once a month when the school is calling and saying there's been a contact, go get tested. Don't come back till the test is negative. That's what we have to do. That's our new normal.
About the testing, I know one of the difficulties is getting your hands on them. I was in the drugstore yesterday. They go as soon as they are put on the shelves. So what if you're having difficulty getting your child tested, but they have all of the signs of a bad cold, flu, COVID, because they really all look alike.
Right. Now, you know, and I'll say this, you're right. The testing, they'll drop 2,000, and next thing you know, it's, let's say at a library, and they're all gone, and they're promising 50,000, et cetera. And I'm not that keen on folks waiting in line outside in the elements for 2 hours trying to get tests. And there are times I have said recently, when you have your relative, let's say the big sister comes from college and she's positive for COVID, and then a day or two later, other ones in the family are having the same symptoms, you know what? Assume it's COVID. and due to quarantine. And if you can't get out to get the testing because, as you said, the shelves are empty and it's hard to find and you have to make appointments and that's 2 or 3 days later, begin the quarantine. Still go through the CDC. It can also be a cold with COVID. So treat that, okay, but make sure you respect that it could also be COVID.
Well, again, Dr. Marilyn Corder, pediatrician from the Howard University School of Medicine, thank you so much for your insight and your guidance on this. A lot of parents are still concerned, obviously, not only with the health of their children, but also the health of their families overall. And so we want to do our best to make sure that people are safe during this surge and beyond. So again, Dr. Marilyn Corder, thank you so much.
Thank you, and be safe. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, January 3rd, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.